lot of times what happens is parents sign their kids up for lessons, and if they know nothing beyond that, that it's, you know, it's sort of like there's a honeymoon period. Everyone's excited. The teacher's excited. The child's excited. The parents are excited. And then maybe about a month in, the realization that, oh, this is actually hard work. And there's a lot of frustration involved, and there's a lot of setbacks and things like that. And, oh, kids don't remember to practice. And, oh, it's the parents' job to help remind kids, especially, you know, young kids. Like, all of that needs to be given to parents, I think, as information so that they know what is the road ahead.
Welcome to the Piano Sensei Way. I am your host, Clinton Pratt, and I am here to help you master the art of running a successful piano teaching studio. I'm excited to have Barbie Wong with us today. Welcome, Barbie, and tell us where you live and what or who you teach.
I am in the San Francisco Bay Area. I teach piano, ukulele, but my passion is actually working with parents and music teachers to help solve the problem of kids who don't want to practice.
Yes, that's a very hot topic. I think it's very important. And we actually met in Texas.
Yes.
At the Texas Music Teachers Conference. Yeah, so for some reason I'm like, oh, she's in Texas. But no, we just both happened to be there. But you're in California.
Yeah, that's right. That was a great conference. And I have to say, I really enjoyed your presentation on improv because you broke it down so simply. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to use that with my music students. So that was wonderful.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, and I saw your presentation, which was on involving parents and all of that. And I remember it just being so helpful. And then just to tell the audience, Barbie has classes and workshops and things for parents of music students. And a few of my students' parents took her class, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So that was fun. I think everybody should take it, all parents. So I tried to promote it. And then I recently saw you again at MTNA. And
that's right.
Then it just occurred to me, oh, you should definitely come on the podcast. So, all right, we're talking about, well, lots of things, but from the angle that we need to get the parents involved. So,
well, what I was going to say is, yeah, having them involved is such a wonderful and vital part of learning music. Of course, there are students who, you know, somehow I feel like there's the miracle students that are very few who somehow are self-motivated to practice. But for sort of the rest of us, we need some degree of parental guidance and support.
So how did you make this one of your passions, or how did that come about?
That's a great question. Well, what happened was, you know, I'm both a music teacher and a parent. And so when my older kid was 4 years old, I thought, oh, it's time for music lessons. And we'd been just sort of like banging on the piano, singing, dancing, a lot of really free and fun things. And, you know, I was raised by a tiger mom. So I thought, okay, it's time for lessons. And little did I know that that was just the death of her love for music, because I was essentially giving her a lesson once a week and then practicing with her, but then practicing in such a way that was like giving her another lesson. So this poor four-year-old was getting everyday music lessons and also my critical voice. I didn't know that by pointing out all the things that my child was doing wrong was just really hard, especially for a four-year-old. I mean, you could do that to like a 10-year-old or 12-year-old, and that's still mm-hmm. really hard. So when I saw that my daughter was losing interest in piano, I thought, wow, I need to do something differently. Something's got to change. Otherwise, she will just hate piano and hate music. And so I started to do a lot of research. I wanted to figure out, well, what can I do? What can I do to help? And there were some resources out there, But as I did more research, I learned that, first of all, it's very common to be in that place where your child doesn't want to practice, and that there's not as much focus on that part of learning music. I think there's a lot of there's help for teachers, you know, how do you teach the students and all of these, you know, pedagogy skills. But when it comes to being a parent of a child learning music, there wasn't as much out there. And so I want to fill that gap. I want to provide parents essentially with the tools that I lacked when my kids were young.
Yeah. And so a lot of us are thinking, oh yeah, we want parents to be involved, but in your case, you were involved, but it didn't help or it made it worse. Right.
Yeah.
So, and yeah,
that's quite common. So there are, I mean, obviously there's a whole range of parental involvement, and, you know, I see parents in the same place that I used to be, which is totally involved, but fairly negative or very negative and very critical. And so, you know, that obviously, as my story demonstrates, is a way to really, you know, delete a child's love for music. But there's a way to be involved that's actually quite helpful. And in fact, a lot of kids want their parents involved in a certain way. They want the parent to say, wow, I see that you're improving, to notice what they're doing well. Sometimes they want the parent to really just sit by their side, maybe silently even, but so that they don't feel like when they're practicing, it's this lonely endeavor. So, you know, that's what I help parents with, recognizing how much to be involved and realizing that their role is quite important, but to try not to step into the, you know, critical, being so restrictive and controlling that the child just completely blows up and just decides that they don't want to do music ever again.
Right. Yeah, I think that's important. So can we get into some details of how you encourage parents to do that? You did mention, you know, focusing on something positive that they did well. But what else? Because what if they are doing something wrong and we don't want them to learn it the wrong way and, you know, disappoint the teacher or have bad habits?
Yeah, that's one of the biggest sort of the balancing things, the tricky parts of being the parent, because sometimes you feel like you're kind of in between the teacher and the child. Mm-hmm. And so I think one of the things, if it's possible, is to talk to the teacher and to basically figure out, like, what is the parent's responsibility in, you know, in the whole music education, and what are the teacher's responsibilities? And it can also depend on what the child's temperament is. So some children are very open to parents saying, oh, remember that this is the right note is over here, so let's, you know, play that right note. Some children are totally fine with a parent saying that. Well, some children, if you say that to them, they will blow up because it's the parent. And mm-hmm. as if you're a parent, you know, sometimes it doesn't matter what you say. It's just the fact that you are the parent. And so if you can arrange or negotiate and communicate with the teacher to figure out, okay, well, it seems like when my child has me correct them, they blow up. That doesn't look like that's helping. So what if my role is I'm in the practice room with my child and I remind them to practice and I sit next to them and I only point out what's going well. And then what the teacher has to do is then in the lesson, then correct all the mistakes. And then maybe even do it to the point where they correct the mistakes and then they say, okay, well, when you play it without the mistakes, you make a recording. And then that way we can see that you're practicing it correctly. So there's other ways to do it so that the parent isn't directly correcting the child if that's what the child is incapable of handling.
Mm-hmm. So do you have parents sit in on lessons so that they know what's going on and then what to do at home?
It really depends on the teacher. Some teachers are, they want the parents to sit in on lessons. Some teachers don't. So it's part of the process of when you're finding a teacher, figuring out, okay, is this going to work for our family? Because if the teacher's requiring the parents to sit in and the parents don't have time, you know, that won't work. But if they're okay sitting in, then that works. You know, I teach the Suzuki method, so there is quite a bit of parents sitting in on lessons. But I've heard of stories where sometimes when parents sit in on lessons, it's actually quite harmful or disturbing to the child for the parent to be there. So again, it depends on, you know, what's happening. In general, with young children, parents sitting in on lessons, that's really helpful because then they know, oh, okay, the teacher's focusing on these things when we're home. Okay, these are the things to, you know, to focus on, and I can help my child with the actual practice. As the child grows older, you know, the parent's presence in the lessons is not as necessary.
Yeah, I've heard contrary views as well. Some teachers require the parents have to be there at every lesson. Other ones don't want the parents in there at all. I am sort of in the middle. You know, sometimes it's helpful, sometimes it's not. I have one student whose parent knows that it's not as helpful for her to be in there. So, and it's the mother, and she, because when she's in there, she's a musician too, the mother, and she'll try to jump in and correct, oh, remember it's F sharp, you know, that kind of thing. She, you know, at first she thought she's being helpful, like, oh, remember we did it that way and we want to show the teacher what, you know, but now she's realizing, and I have interrupted her, you know, wait, let me teach and do it my way and let you see how that's going to happen, where I'm going to let the student discover their own mistake, you know. And once the mother realized that, she got it, she understood, but she still couldn't help herself. So she just said, I'm just gonna sit out because I can't yeah. resist. Yeah. And actually it lessons went much better.
Yeah.
So, and this is for the student is 11 years old. Mm-hmm. So
mm-hmm. Yeah, there's many stories. I remember this teacher told me there was a parent who would basically tug at her daughter's hair every time her daughter made a mistake. And, you know, this is a teacher who had required the parents to sit in on lessons, but then she solved that by putting the parent's chair across the room. So the parent was no longer next to the child.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So do you include practice assignments for the students that the parents should understand as well, so they know how to practice it? Or mm-hmm. I know you mentioned before, it depends. So with some parents, you might encourage them just, you know, be there in the room and make positive comments. But I assume sometimes you have specific assignments or instructions that you want the parents to go through with their child?
Yeah. So actually, just to be clear, when I, in my own music lessons, when I have the parents sit in, they actually are encouraged not to make comments during the lesson. They're actually encouraged to take the notes, especially when the child's really young. And then that way they can take note of, you know, how to practice. And occasionally I'll check in. I'll say, hey, does this make sense when your child goes home? This is how to practice. And then I'll also check in and I'll say, oh, you know, mom, why don't you come over here? Why don't you practice with, you know, your child? And then, so then I'll actually get to watch the parent practice with the child inside the lesson. Mm-hmm. So then I can see, oh, are they doing it in a way where my instructions are very clear, or do I need to be a bit more clear about my instructions, or, you know, help coach the parents essentially in that moment? Cause that's really helpful to see if the parent is practicing a completely different way, then, you know, that doesn't help as well either.
Right. I know a lot of parents who just want to drop off their child to lessons, and that's pretty much their involvement, right? And then they want the child to have a great experience and learn the piano and become a pop star or a virtuoso. And then they're disappointed, you know, in a couple months, you know, why can't my kid do anything? In your own studio, how do you either require or strongly suggest their involvement? Like, do you make them agree to it or just figure out if it's a good fit?
Well, I actually have any new parents come in to do a set of parent education courses. So that it's essentially, it's the ones that the parents of your students did so that they get all this information up front so that they understand things like, you know, when it comes to practice, most kids don't like to practice. And so how do you work with that? Instead of coming in, a lot of times what happens is parents sign their kids up for lessons. And if they know nothing beyond that, it's, you know, it's sort of like there's a honeymoon period. Everyone's excited. The teacher's excited. The child's excited. The parents are excited. And then maybe about a month in, the realization that, oh, this is actually hard work. And there's a lot of frustration involved. And there's a lot of setbacks and things like that. And, oh, kids don't remember to practice. And, oh, it's the parents' job to help remind kids, especially, you know, young kids. Like all of that needs to be given to parents, I think, as information so that they know what is the road ahead. You know, it's almost like, hey, we're going on a road trip. Let's look at the map. We want to get to this destination. Well, oh, look over here. There's going to be a hurricane, you know, in 2 days when we encounter this area. And so let's make sure we have everything ready for that hurricane. That's what I try to give parents before, you know, the lessons go underway so that they know, oh, you know what? This is probably a little too much for us. I don't know that we have the time and attention to do this. Or maybe they realize, oh, okay, well, I'm okay with my child not advancing very much. So if they don't practice and they just go to lessons, then that's the way it's going to go. So giving them a map, I think, is very helpful.
Yeah, I love the fact that you want to have them take a parent class, parent orientation, whatever. So can you tell us how that looks? Like, do they pay for it, or is that included in, you know, when they register? And how many classes or how long is it?
For my music studio, it's just included. I just say, you know, come in. And actually before they come in, I have them come and just observe 4 lessons where I teach so that they're actually starting to see, well, how does this teacher teach? And do I even like the environment, or, you know, is this okay? So the parent and the child, who the prospective student, they come and then they just observe. And in some ways it actually gets the child, some children get very excited. And I've had parents call me up like after the first observation, can we start lessons next week? My child is so excited. And I say, I love that. And no, let's do this more times, because then the parents start to understand just how I teach and my method, and the child gets even more excited. So then I had one child like sprint to the piano on his first day because he was so excited. And I think that's part of the education is, you know, that beginning first 4 observations. And then the parent classes are essentially, well, I used to do them live, and now I've actually recorded all of them, all of the information, because there's a lot of information, but I recorded all of them into these videos. And so now what I'm doing is having the parents watch the videos on their own time, which is kind of in some ways easier. Mm-hmm. And then we meet live to go over just the basic ideas and then answer questions.
Okay. Oh my goodness. You're amazing. Okay. This is so good. Everybody should do this. Okay. So let's go back just for a second. So first they observe 4 lessons. Now, is that one lesson like once a week for 4 weeks with the same student, or does it matter? Like, can they do 4 in one day?
I recommend week to week, just because then there's time to absorb the information.
Okay. Right.
And I actually will also get on the phone with a parent the day after the observation to just talk to them, see if they have questions. And during the observation, I have the parents actually fill out the sheet of sort of like an observation sheet, just questions like, you know, how is the teacher teaching? What kind of methods do you see being employed? Because the way I teach isn't simply telling the child what to do. Mm-hmm. The child will play, and then I will play it the way I'd like the child to play, so that they're really using their ears to hear. And it's okay if I have to play a few times for the child to really tune in to what I'm doing. But so, yeah, it's a different style. But having the parents look at the way I teach then helps them understand, oh, okay, this is why, you know,
right,
she's doing this.
And then the next week they come in and you want them to see the same student? Or
they can see the same student. Okay. Yeah. Sometimes they like to, you know, I think sometimes it's nice to see a few different students, but sometimes it's nice to see the progression. That part I'm not really a stickler on because sometimes it also depends on the schedule.
Right. Okay. And then the classes are recorded, videos, how many and how long?
Oh, that's a good question.
An idea, is it like, you know, an hour total? Or is it like 10, 1 hour?
Oh, yeah. There's seven parts to it. And there's about 37 videos, I think. And they range from 2 to 10 minutes each.
Okay. 2 to 10 minutes and maybe like 30 something. Okay. Yeah. So that's quite a bit of time. But mm-hmm. what I like about it is they're investing all this time. Well, quick question to interrupt myself. Have they paid anything yet?
Okay. So yeah. So they do pay for the observations. I asked them to pay because they're coming in. Mm-hmm. I'm spending the time on the phone with them. We're arranging that. And then that also includes like a one-on-one session with me.
Right. Okay. So they've paid and then you send them the videos. And are they paying for that too?
Yeah. Separately? Well, no. Then when they sign up as, you know, they would sign up for, my students sign up for a whole year at a time. Yeah. Or they commit to a whole year. And the year is like the school year. And they pay for each semester. There's two semesters. So they would pay for a semester at a time. And then just part of that, you know, there's no extra charge, but included inside that are the parent education classes.
Okay. So once they've paid basically for the semester, then you consider them like part of your studio now, and now you give them the video recordings.
Yes, exactly. Yeah,
okay. And then you meet live with them to discuss that, like questions and everything. Then they start lessons.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
And the thing is, I don't mind if, you know, we start doing a few, if we start the parent classes and the beginning of the lessons at the same time, because they've had the four observations. I've had a chance to kind of give them sort of the highlights of the parent education classes so that they kind of know, oh, okay, we're not like going on like, you know, a Hawaiian vacation where everything's going to be, you know, beautiful and easy. But that it's quite worth it, even with all the difficulties that might lie ahead.
I imagine with all of this, where they're investing their time and coming to observe the lessons and paying for those, and then they pay for the semester, and then they have to watch all those videos, that, yeah, just their level of commitment, you probably would have good retention.
Oh yeah.
Because they're not just like, oh, let's try lessons, and they, you know, pay you for the first lesson or money, right? And then they don't realize what they're getting into, and then they quit, right? So this is really, it's more involved, obviously. I was gonna say tedious, but that's more negative. It's more involved. So they're probably more likely to stay because they know what they're getting into.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, and here's the thing, this is what works for me. And I know not all music teachers have the bandwidth to, you know, to do all of this. I like it because I get to know the families really well. I get to know the parents quite well. In fact, sometimes I've had so many parents say, wow, this is like therapy. And I was like, well, it's not meant to be because I'm not a therapist, but you know, it's a lot of reflecting for the parents on what, you know, they're doing at home and how they can help their children in a more positive way.
It's really good. I'm just, yeah, it just has my brain going. I actually have a presentation that I did on how to practice and how to help your child. And I recorded it. And so I'm thinking now, oh, I could send that, make that a requirement. But I don't know if, like, how will I know they actually watched it? I guess with you meet with them after. So I guess you can tell if they didn't watch it, right? Or do you have some way of testing them?
Yeah. No, I guess that's, yeah. I guess it's on the honor system.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like most parents are just going to say, oh no, I didn't have time this week or, you know, or all. Yeah, I think so. I mean, I guess you could make a fun little quiz if you want, you know, for them to take after they watch your video.
Right. Or like you could put little Easter eggs in there. Right.
Yeah.
So you could, you know, at the end, I'm going to ask a good question. Like, you know, some random word pops up in the middle or something they have to watch for. This is all really good. Do you want to connect with other teachers in person? Do you want to learn new teaching strategies and explore outside the box approaches? Join us at the Creative Teaching Conference, a radical retreat to recharge and reinvigorate your teaching. This unique conference was started by me and my two friends and colleagues, Christopher Oyle and Tony Parlapiano, back in the summer of 2022. All three of us had so many ideas we wanted to share, but instead of trying to get selected for an MTNA or NCKP conference, we created our own event. We each present a few workshops, but we also have guest presenters as well. Topics include improvisation, composition, student-led learning. You'll experience inspiring workshops on creative teaching strategies and creative performance ideas. Learn about different ways to structure lessons, such as online groups, memberships, and subscription models. We eat meals together and plan social time so you can connect with teachers from all over the country, forming new musical friendships that will last a lifetime. Mark your calendars for July 7 to 9, 2024 in Cincinnati, Ohio. Check out creativeteachingconference.com for more info. Another thing I wanted to ask was, how do you encourage, or do you, I think you do, how do you encourage parents to provide the right musical environment at home?
Mm.
So that could be either practice environment, but also just in general, you know, like listening to music.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's one of the most important parts of raising a musical child. The environment accounts for so much. A lot of times people think, oh, so-and-so is a musician because their parents are musicians, because it's genetic. And I say, no, it's because they're growing up with so much music that in some ways they can't help but reproduce the same sounds.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, I say, first of all, everybody has a phone. It's very easy to create a musical environment by just pressing play on your phone. And I encourage also parents to play music they love. It doesn't have to be classical. Not everybody loves classical, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much variety. You know, play the music you love, because what you're doing is not just giving them that music, but you're actually showing them your love for music. I still remember when my dad would play the Beatles when I was young, and I can still see him putting on that record with his big smile on his face. And he just loved music, loved the Beatles. And so, you know, from there, I was like, oh yeah, that is kind of interesting. That is really fun. So that's basically one of the best ways. And also to know that children learn through the senses, and especially multiple senses. So if they can see people make music, like in live concerts or even watching videos, you know, watch a video with your child there's so much out there that you could watch. And, you know, if you don't know who, pick again your favorite musician or one of your favorite songs and, you know, watch that together. But there's so many fun videos. I actually created a playlist on YouTube where there's all these fun cartoon videos. I mean, you remember Looney Tunes, and, you know, there's like Bugs Bunnies, and there's also like Tom and Jerry. There's like a cat concerto. I mean, those are just so fun to watch, and they're making music.
Right. Yeah. I think of my own childhood. I do come from a musical family too. And like you said, some people were like, oh, okay, well, it's genetic or whatever. But I agree. I think it's a lot to do with just that I was around music. And when we had family get-togethers, I actually didn't like it. Like, we'd all sit around at Christmas or whatever, and everybody would sing. you know, when I was a little boy, I don't know, I thought it was cheesy. I didn't want to do it. I didn't want to sing. Oh, you know, and I played pianos too. So like, oh, Clinton, play the piano. And, you know, so sometimes I wasn't into it, or, you know, it wasn't cool to be into it. But looking back, I'm realizing, wow, I was around all of that and people singing in harmony, and I was hearing it, and I could do it too. Kids remember things and soak in and absorb when they're so young, right? I even remember a song that my mom and my aunt, I think it was just them, or maybe it was their mom too. Pardon me, boys, is that the Chattanooga tutu? And they'd sing it in, like, you know, three-part harmony and everything. And, you know, I was like 5 or 6, but I still remember it. Like, I could sing it, you know. Looking back, I know that's very important for having that kind of environment.
Yeah.
So if your family doesn't sing or do that, like you said, you can still be around it by playing recordings.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I guess one of the reasons why I also say that, because my parents are not musicians. And in fact, my mom is, throughout my life, has been decidedly not musical. I mean, once in a while we'll get together and, like, everyone's going to, you know, clapping to a song, and you can see her struggle to even clap on the beat. That this is why I think it's not genetic, because both of my parents are not, you know, musicians. Right. But that's also to say that sometimes, you know, I know a lot of parents compare. They're like, why is this child so, like, advanced, and my child's not doing so well, and things of that sort. And again, it could be environment. You know, it could be that that child is growing up with two musician parents, or, you know, the parents somehow, they both just love to go to live music concerts. And so, like, that child has that sort of that, advantage, or they're in a school district where music has been prioritized, and they're at school, they're given all of these wonderful things, and your child just somehow is in the school district or has friends who are totally into sports, and that's why your child is like, hey, can I play soccer instead of play music? So, you know, it's just, I think, also giving ourselves a little grace to realize, well, we can try as much as we can, and then there's also certain limits to what we can do with the environment.
Yeah. So here's another question. How should a parent remind a child to practice, or, you know, get into a routine or whatever, without it seeming like it's a chore? Does that make sense? Like, if my mom bugged me, like, you know, it'd be like, clean your room. Did you clean your room? You got to do it by then, or else, you know. Mm-hmm. And so should it be the same, or how should it be, you know, okay, go practice piano. If you don't practice piano, you know, and then they don't want to do it.
Yeah. Well, I think realizing first that there's a difference between playing music and practicing. And so a lot of times when people think about music lessons, they think their kids are going to be playing music. But playing is the easy part. That's when you've spent hours and hours and hours, perfected something or gotten something really good, and then you play. And so it looks easy. So when you see a performance, they're playing because they've already put in all the sweat and hard labor. Practice is the sweat and hard labor that is difficult. And so realizing that those are two really different things, and that's why most kids don't want to practice, is that it is difficult. But that if you make a routine out of it and do it as much as you can daily, I mean, I would say even getting your child to the instrument for a 5-10 minute session, as long as it's a daily habit, that's going to build something so that they realize after some time, oh, I guess this is just what we do. This is what I'm supposed to do. I did this with my children. I just said, hey, our family culture means you learn an instrument and you practice every day. And, you know, I wasn't hounding them to practice hours a day, but they had to do that before they got to go play with their friends, or, I mean, you know, they got to do these other sort of, you know, their leisure activities. So making sure practice happens before the leisure activities. I've made the mistake of saying, oh, yeah, sure, go hang out with your friends. And then after they come back, it is so hard to get them to practice. Mm-hmm. So get that done, and then they can do that. And then after some time, what's really neat is they just get better. With enough practice, they get better, and then they build confidence, and then they get inspired much more to practice. So it's this circle that's going to build on itself. I call it the motivation circle. So you have motivation. People want to know, how do you get motivation to practice? But what happens is the second part is, well, after you practice, you progress. And so when you progress, you get motivated. So you need to practice to progress, and then you get motivated, and then it just circles on itself.
Right. Yes. That's very interesting, because it's like, you got to get that wheel going,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So you got to motivate them to practice, or maybe they just practice, but eventually it comes back around to getting progress and enjoying it. That makes them motivated to practice. Yeah. So you got to get that engine going. So yeah, back to the question of how do parents remind their child to practice without making it seem like a chore, is maybe it does seem like a chore at first a little bit,
yeah.
But not a big deal. Like, okay, let's just do 5 minutes. And then hopefully after not too long of a time, they start getting better and are enjoying it. Because of course we like doing things we're good at. So
yes,
you want to get good at it soon so you can like it soon. Right, which is also a whole nother topic of like, don't try to do something that's too hard. It's going to take you forever, and you're going to give up. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, reminding kids to practice, it's sometimes especially if you set it up where the kids can't do something until they practice, like they can't have their devices or they can't go and play with their friends. So then, you know, if they're like, oh, I want to go play with my friends. Oh, did you already practice? Oh, no. Okay. All right. Well, go practice so you can play with your friends. I mean, I think parents can also be very calm about it. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Well, it's fine to practice. And that doesn't mean the child's going to willingly and say, oh, shucks, mom, thanks for reminding me. You know, I think it's just realizing kids might or very likely will resist here and there. And if we can, as parents, be very, you know, steady and consistent, because they will push you and they will say, well, I wonder if I can just get away with this. I wonder if I can get away with this. But if you can just be, okay, no, we are going to practice every day. After some time, the child will just say, oh, okay, all right. And in fact, I think my younger kid was 13 and I was going to go do a presentation, and you know, he's like, okay, well, have a great time doing your presentation. I'm going to practice. And then I thought, oh, you just said you're going to practice and I didn't have to remind you. Oh my goodness. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, why do you feel like you just go and practice? And he said, well, that's just what I do. I just practice every day. So after some time, it will get to the point where it just becomes part of what happens with life on a daily basis.
Yeah. And you mentioned playing being different than practicing, which is definitely true. And I want to know what you think about this. With my students, I have them keep a playlist. We call it a playlist. And it's pieces that they can play, right? It's where they've done the work and now they can just play it, right? So it might be 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 pieces. I don't know. One of my students likes to have like 15. But it's basically just a list of pieces they can play that they keep basically in their repertoire, right? They can just play on demand. Like, hey, play me something. Oh, can you still play, you know, this sonatina or whatever it is? And then they can just play it. So my first question is, what do you think about that? And the follow-up is, do you think it's helpful if parents at home say, oh, you know, play me one of your pieces. Can I hear something from your playlist?
Well, I love that. I encourage that a lot, because, you know, if you think about it, we really want to think about not just the practice session or the last music lesson, but we want to think 20 years from now, what do we want children to be able to be doing? I actually learned this from Merlin Thompson. And he's like, well, what needs to happen today, either in the lesson or in the practice room, so that the child in 20 years is making music. And hopefully when they're an adult making music, they will spend a huge amount of time just playing. I mean, that's what we want. So why not make that part of the practice routine? You know, I think it's great if parents are like, hey, can you play such and such? Or, wow, I love that piece. You know, any chance you could play that for me? Because I just love to listen to it. And that's so motivating for children to say, oh, yeah, that's kind of cool. I got all of these pieces and I can play it. So I love what you're doing. Keep doing it.
Yeah. And I think it's, like you said, it's the easy part, but then as long as you keep playing it, you can keep doing it for years. You know, like I have my favorites that, like, I love the Gershwin Preludes and different things that I've played for like decades. Right.
Yeah.
And so sometimes when I'm with my mom or something, she'll be like, oh, play, you know, can you play that one again? And it's nice. And I don't think a lot of people realize that's good to do. It's nice to do. It's enjoyable just to keep playing things for a long time, right? It doesn't have to be, oh, I learned piece A and then I'm done. So now let me do B and I'm done and I can never play those again. I can only play what I'm practicing right now. And it's if I open my book and there it is, right?
Yes. Yes, exactly. And I also encourage starting the practice session, unless a child is so ready to just dive in. I encourage just a couple of minutes of just letting the child play whatever they want. It could be anything, you know, and you can do this. I actually have another class that I created called Games for Music Practice. And I talk about using stand timers. And you can, you know, for kids that might need to know how long things are going to last, you can do like a 1 minute, 2 minute. And then you can say, okay, well, that's just play whatever you want for that time. And, you know, they can mess around. They can even play something really badly. But that, I would call that sacred time. Because, again, you want the child to be able to explore, like, the edges of things. And so, you know, let the child do that. Don't say anything bad about that. And then they can get into their actual sort of practice session.
Okay, yeah, that's a really good idea. So we're getting close to the end of our time, which flew by. Maybe you can come back another time. But I wondered, is there anything else that you can suggest to teachers to help with their parents? Because not all of us are Barbie Wong. So we don't, either we can't or we don't have, you know, like we do all these things with having the classes and all this involvement. But I don't know, or maybe that's too big of a question, but just like your top tip or a couple of things that teachers can do right now that might be fairly easy to implement.
Yeah. Well, first of all, realize that every family has a different situation. So, you know, you might be suggesting things and certain families can do it easily and certain families just can't. And it doesn't mean anything about you as a teacher. It just means that, you know, some parents have it in them because of their situation to then implement. So, I mean, and I encourage as much as possible to keep the lines of communication open with parents, because sometimes they are struggling and then they don't say anything. But if you just very simply say, you know, just, hey, let me know what's going on. Sometimes they'll very likely open up. Another thing I suggest sort of along that lines is to have meetings twice a year with the parents, and then also include the student as the child. You know, I would say maybe when the student is like, depending on the maturity, maybe about 9 or 10. So that in the beginning of the year, you kind of check in, and this could be your first lesson. And I highly encourage doing this at the lesson. Say, well, what are your goals? What are you hoping to get out of music lessons? So that you can kind of set a plan for the year. And also, what other activities is your child involved in? So you know, if the child is in, you know, a soccer team and a baseball team and like three other instruments, you know, practice might be very hard to come by. And then check in again in the middle of the year, just to, again, during the lesson, say, well, we had these goals set up. You wanted to learn 6 pieces. Right now you've learned 3. Is this still what you want to do with your goals? Like, what else are you thinking of? Maybe you want to change it. How can I support you getting to these goals? And so making sure you're just checking in with families regularly can be very helpful.
Yeah, those are really good suggestions. Well, Barbie, thank you so much. This has been amazing. Just to wrap up, is there anything final you want to say and or tell people, a website or promote anything you want?
Well, Yes, I actually have a ton of resources on my website. People want to just go to barbiewong.com. I have a mini guide. It's 10 ways to inspire kids to make music. It's a free guide. They can download that. And if they have questions, of course, they can feel free to reach out. But yeah, I would just say that this journey of, you know, teaching music students, of raising a musical child, it's a very convoluted journey and it's full of twists and turns. So there's no right way to do it. I would say the best thing you can do is arm yourself with as much information as you can and also connect with other people, reach out, find a community, and then this journey will be a lot more easy and a lot more fun.
Great. Well, thank you so much. And yeah, I hope everybody checks out Barbie's website. And just a reminder to go to thepianosenseiway.com for all the podcasts. And we are on YouTube as well, if you would like to see our lovely faces. And that's also The Piano Sensei Way on YouTube. So take care, everybody. Hope this has been helpful. Please reach out if you would like to comment or have any questions about this topic. I'd love to hear from you. Take care, everybody.